This episode of Bend the Knee is brought to you by Lord Hunter the Foulmouthed of Riverrun, whose words are, "Our hate fire burns bright."
Hello and welcome to Bend the Knee, a Song of Ice and Fire podcast. I am Sir Matt, the Bud Knight.
And I am Sir Ezra the Watchful. Welcome to our Song of Ice and Fire book club. Today we're into chapter 24, Bran 4 of A Game of Thrones. And in the world of Ice and Fire, we are discussing Maekar Targaryen, first of his name, King of the Andals, End of the First Men, Lord of the Seven Kingdoms, and Protector of the Realm.
It's true.
I just kind of feel like you need to say the whole...
You do.
The whole
shebang. He chose a new crown. We'll get to it.
He did, actually.
That's about all we know about him, actually. We'll get to that, too.
Yeah. So, not much for him. But kind of neat. We like to mention at the top of the show, our email address is btkcast@gmail.com. You can send us a raven every Friday. We'll follow up from this episode with just theories and thoughts and what have you. So please send us a raven. We also have our phone number, which is 614-547-2350, and that is our Weirwood network. Mm-hmm. Hit that up and might get it played on the show.
Is it Weirwood or Weirwood?
Whatever it is.
Yep.
It's Weirdwood. That's what it is.
It is weird. So, all right, let's go ahead and head on over to the small council. I'll go ahead and say first, no show news this week. I've been looking for some Game of Thrones, Song of Ice and Fire news. Not a lot going on.
Mm-hmm.
But I will say, just in kind of our updates on life, I believe that Premier League soccer started today.
It did.
And Sir Ezra and I have been going back and forth for weeks, tossing around some who we should pick. You guys have been sending us, letting us know.
Yeah.
And
we made a decision.
You just changed it on the dock.
I did.
You literally right now just
no,
made
I just typed it in there. Yep.
I was all ready to say one thing, and now you changed it.
Real, yeah, I'm just going to have to, you know, you'll see here in a second, yeah.
So. You may change it again.
I might change it. I might not.
All right, so yeah, real quick, we mentioned it way back. We were just like, yeah, we were watching the World Cup. We should get into soccer, or as they call it over there, football.
Yeah.
Yeah, you know, we had some suggestions. Lady Jade said I should consider Manchester United, avoid Arsenal, who was actually my original. Maybe I'll go with Arsenal.
Right.
Sir Robbie of Newcastle suggested some things. Had some people.
He suggested Newcastle.
Yeah.
United. Yep. So.
And some people suggested West Ham, and we were kind of looking at Everton. And
yeah. It's people are pretty. We're
I think
worried
Lord Adam
that
Parker's going with Manchester United. He messaged me today. He said,
yeah.
He said, "You gone with one yet?" And I was like, "Well, I'm going to record it."
Right, yeah.
I think
yeah.
he's going to Manchester United. I think he's doing the same thing. I don't want to get into it.
Yeah.
And he might just cuz they're easy and fun.
Well, it is for fun. So please know we're not trying to isolate any, you know, one group of fans or
and this
you know,
is subject to
of
for me,
out
I feel
there,
like but, it's, I feel like it's kind of subject to change. After one season, once I get to know everybody a little bit more.
Yeah, once we really pay attention to it.
Yeah, because when I picked my favorite, so when I decided I wanted to get into basketball,
mm-hmm.
I was like, all right, I just randomly, this was like 2006, 2007. I've always just watched NFL.
Right.
And so I was like, okay, I really want to pick, I want to get into basketball. So I was just like looking at all the teams. I was like, you know, who should I pick? I picked the Rockets, Houston Rockets. Because I was like, they have like Yao Ming. Kind of cool.
Yeah.
Watched them for one whole season, and then I moved to Portland, and so I was like, well, I might as well just support the Blazers. I've been a Blazers fan since.
Yeah.
And then, of course, well, I kind of like, there's a few players I like, so, you know, wherever LeBron goes, because I'm from Ohio,
yeah,
that's where I'm supporting.
Well, he's the king.
He's the king.
So
you have to support the king.
You got
to
support
him. Right now, I am also kind of a somewhat Lakers fan, just because that's where he is. Had he gone to the Sacramento Kings, I'd watch their games.
Yeah, yeah. We support the king.
Yeah, I support the king. So my team, I guess there's a team I have in my head, but it could change after once I get to follow it. Okay.
Gotcha. Yeah. Well, I think that's kind of fair. You know, we'll get familiar with the players and things. If you have like a favorite player and stuff like that. So, you know, back in the day, I mentioned I followed Chelsea, Frank Lampard, you know, all those guys.
Jose, Mairena,
Drogba.
Coach,
yeah.
Drogba.
Yeah.
Drogba. Yeah.
So.
Khal Drogo.
I mean, same thing. Yeah. So anyways, I think in picking today, you know, I was looking for, we were doing all sorts of things. You were looking up like comparisons to NFL teams, NBA right. teams, all this stuff. And I looked at them on a map because I like to see where they're all kind of at, you know. And I think I decided to go with West Ham.
Yeah.
So okay, I've yeah. said it. It's
hey,
been
there you
said,
go. You've,
so.
You've picked them. Yeah. So I was
even though they got killed today.
Yeah.
But what am I going to do?
What? You know? So they're red and gold, right? Is their colors?
Yeah. They're
they got, like,
kind
hammers,
of like a maroon.
Two hammers.
Yeah.
Based like on a hammer London. And sickle or.
I don't really know exactly. Got to find
Did
out.
Did you look at their logo? Well,
it is a hammer for sure. They've got yeah. like a, yeah. I don't know what, I don't know. So I know that you said Keira Knightley supports them.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
now
yeah,
I almost,
that's good enough for me. Yeah.
I almost went with Arsenal just because I found out Daisy Ridley is a big fan.
Yeah.
So I was like, well, clearly I got to go with Arsenal, but yeah. I'll follow them from afar. And when I interact with her, yeah. we can have something to talk about.
Yeah.
You know?
So, yeah. So for me, I was looking at all sorts of things today. I was looking at, like, what is the NFL equipment? I was like, who's, like, the Oakland Raiders, like, the Detroit Pistons, like, physical team, kind of older team. And yeah. I came across a team called Crystal Palace.
It's crazy.
I mean, they're called Crystal Palace.
Yeah.
How could I not choose them?
That's pretty cool, actually.
It's pretty cool.
Yeah. Yep.
But I think I'm going to go with Manchester United.
Wow.
Well, there's a lot of reasons. And I wanted to go. I didn't. I was.
Oh,
I specifically didn't want to pick them because they're, like, you know, the best and all that stuff. But I was like, you know, I have, like, a friend who lives, like, over there. And it's like, if I would ever go, that's probably, like, what I would go see.
Yeah, yeah.
And they did have David Beckham, who is married to a Spice Girl. So that's cool.
That's pretty, yeah, uh-huh.
That's pretty cool. And I know their song, right, for the movie Eurotrip.
Oh, my gosh.
My baby takes the morning train. She works from 9 to 5 and then, you know. I love that song.
Yeah.
So I already know their song. So I'm good. So if I ever find myself, you know, in a Manchester United bar over there, then I'm good to go.
Wow.
I watched another movie with Elijah Wood where they're like gangs fighting over and they're like, what colors you wear? And I don't want to get murdered. So
no,
I figure if I wear Manchester United in England, I'll be safe.
Yeah. 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 That was a pretty, what was that movie called, man? That
I
was
don't
a
know,
good
man.
Movie.
Gosh,
it was,
I just remember this part where they opened his mouth and, like, put this credit card in his mouth and was like punching. It was like, oh, yeah. I mean, I watched Game of Thrones, and that, like, still is, like, I don't ever want to watch that movie ever again.
Yeah. I'm going to have to look up some cool facts here for West Ham eventually. I don't really have anything pulled up right now, but I'm really going to get into them. You know, I might buy a jersey and just go nuts, I think. So.
Yeah, I feel like Manchester United is, like, the Targaryens of... Yeah. You're just giving me this look.
I mean, maybe they are. I don't know. I thought they were more like the Lannisters.
That's true, yeah.
But I don't know.
No, Chelsea's the Lannisters, isn't that the lion?
Yeah, it doesn't mean that. So it's more like a Czechie lion, you know? One of the offshoot, you know, houses. So anyways, yeah, that's our small council for the day, just trying to pick our teams, getting settled into we're going to have to follow them week by week.
Their
you know?
Manager is Jose Mayorena.
I know.
The chosen one.
Yeah,
oh, now I'm glad. That's sweet.
That's crazy, actually.
Yeah.
That's you. All right. Well, anything else for council?
Nope.
We're good?
Yeah.
Okay. All right, friends. Then let's head over to the Maester's study. This week we're talking about Maker, the first of his name. And he is actually, just for reference here, we talk about the Dunkin' Egg series quite a bit. He is Egg's father.
He is.
So,
but he's not king in any of the three books, is he? I believe Aerys is still king.
Yeah, yeah. You've got starts off with Darren the Good
during the Hedge Knight,
and then Aenys takes over because what happens to Baelor?
Aerys the first takes over.
Oh, is it Aerys?
Yeah, Aerys the first. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. All right. So King Maker. Guys, his chapter is actually really short, so I might read most of it, and actually almost literally there's like one paragraph about him, and then the rest is just about what's going to happen with his heirs.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
So Maker the First was an energetic king and warrior of note, but a harsh man, quick to judge and condemn. He had never possessed his brother Baelor, that's Baelor Breakspear, who was supposed to be king, but he accidentally killed during the Trial of Seven with Sir Duncan the Tall. He never possessed his brother's gifts, and that made friends and allies come easily. And after his brother's death at his hands, however inadvertent, he became even more stern and unforgiving. Such was his desire to split from the past that he had a new crown made, a warlike crown with black iron points and a band of red gold, since Aegon the Conqueror's crown had been lost after Daeron the First's death in Dorne. So where's that crown at?
It's lost.
It's in Dorne.
Yeah, I guess lost. And I think remember, it wasn't explained as to how Blackfyre got back.
Yeah. So, well, we don't know where Blackfyre is. Yeah.
Right.
Well, Blackfyre was there. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. But it somehow got back. Remember?
Yeah.
I think Lord Adam Parker asked that question. Like, how does it get back? We don't really know. We just know that it does.
Yeah. And
so
then
perhaps the crown could have come back as well. We just don't know. But
yeah. Because then because Blackfyre goes to Aegon the Fourth, hands it to Daemon Blackfyre.
Right.
And then it's lost.
Right, yeah. Supposedly with Bittersteel, it's still with him, but you know, who knows?
Yeah. So anyway, he makes a new crown, yet Maekar ruled in a time of relative peace between two of the Blackfyre rebellions, and what turmoil there was in his reign was largely sparked by his own sons. The chief issue of Maekar's reign was the question of his heirs. He had a number of sons and daughters, but there were those who had reason to doubt their fitness to rule. The eldest, Prince Daeron, was known as the Drunken and preferred not to be styled Prince of Summerhall because he found Dragonstone such a gloomy abode. Or preferred to be styled Prince of Summerhall because he found Dragonstone gloomy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Next after him was Prince Arryn, known as Bright Flame or Brightfire, a cruel knight and dabbler in the dark arts. Both of these princes died before their father, though both had issue. Prince Daeron had a daughter, Viella, and the girl sadly proved simple. Mm-hmm. Arryn Brightflame had a son in 232 and was given the ominous name of Maegor by his sire, but the Bright Prince himself died that same year after he drank a cup of wildfire, thinking it would transform him into a dragon.
Yep.
His third son, Aemon, becomes a big deal.
Yeah.
Was a bookish boy who had been sent to the Citadel in his youth and emerged a sworn and chained maester. Youngest of the king's son was Prince Aegon, who had served as a squire to the Hedge Knight, the same Hedge Knight in whose defense Baelor Breakspear died. Whilst a boy, he earned the name Egg. Daeron is a jape and Arryn is a fright, but Aegon is more than half a peasant. One court wit was heard in his remark. King Maekar died in battle in 233 AC whilst leading his army against a rebellious lord on the Dornish marches. Man, those Targaryens need to stay out of those Dornish marches.
Yeah, they really do.
Considerable confusion arose to his succession. Rather than risk another Dance of the Dragons, the king's hand, Bloodraven, elected to call a great council to decide the matter. In 233 AC, hundreds of lords gathered and assembled in King's Landing. With both of Maekar's eldest sons deceased, there were four possible claimants. The Great Council dismissed Prince Daeron's sweet but simple-minded daughter, Viella. Only a few spoke up for Arryn Brightflame's son, Maegor. An infant king would have meant a long, contentious regency, and there were also fears that the boy might have inherited his father's cruelty and madness. So if you don't know, if you read the Hedge Knight, that's all how it all starts, is he is like kicking this girl, Tanzel Tutal,
mm-hmm.
who's not too tall for Dunk.
That's right.
So he says, and then Duncan kind of beats the crap out of him, and that starts a trial by seven, and
right.
Dunk beats the crap out of him again.
Yeah.
Then he actually gets exiled to Essos.
He does, yeah, yeah. Just because he's kind of brought some in that whole story, disgrace in a sense, and he's just kind of a loose cannon, you know. And so I think it's time to kind of, you know, send him away. But I mean, at that point in time, as you said earlier, actually at the very start of it, it is Daeron the Good is still ruling, isn't it? And then
And then you have Darian, the other brother who we mentioned died. He actually dies during the second Duncan Egg book, during that spring sickness.
Okay,
that
yeah.
That kills off a lot of people. He actually has green dreams.
Yes, he does. That's why he's always drinking, right?
Yeah.
Yep.
So, and then, let's see here. Prince Aegon was the obvious choice, but some lords distrusted him, saying that, again, he was half a peasant.
Mm-hmm.
Even as the Great Council was debating, however, another claimant appeared in King's Landing, none other than Aenys Blackfyre, the fifth of the Black Dragon's seven sons. When the Great Council had first been announced, Aenys had written from exile in Tyrosh, putting forth his case, in hopes that the words would win him the Iron Throne. Blood Raven responds to him, offering him safe conduct.
Mm-hmm.
Air
quote there, safe conduct.
Yeah, hey, why don't you? Yeah, you should. You should just come.
Come on over.
We're not going to hurt you. Unwisely, Aenys accepted. Yet hardly had he entered the city with the gold cloak seized hold of him and dragged him to the Red Keep, where his head was struck off immediately by Blood Raven.
Yeah.
Soon thereafter, the prince who was an egg was chosen by the majority of the Great Council. The fourth son of a fourth son, Aegon the Fifth, would become widely known as Aegon the Unlikely for having stood out so far of the succession in his youth.
Yeah.
So I will say, just real quick, you do get a little bit more of Makar in the Hedge Knight book.
Yeah.
And in that, he's kind of, I would argue he's kind of stern but fair. He kind of reminds me a lot of like Stannis.
Yeah, he is. Yep.
Because he has a conversation with Duncan after the tournament's over, and he's kind of really regretting that he was the one who accidentally killed his brother.
Yeah.
He's like, why should, that's when Duncan says there may come a day when the realm needs a hedge knight.
Right. Yeah. Cause he's kind of like, why would the gods, spare this hedge knight, and not
for
his brother.
A dragon.
Right. Yeah. It just didn't make sense to him. And he's actually branded a kinslayer from that day forward. So, his reign is kind of marred in a sense, in some degree, because he's a kinslayer. He killed his own brother, which is, in the eyes of the gods, is not a good thing.
Right.
So,
and then he does have a conversation in that same conversation with Sir Duncan. You get to see a little bit more of it in that he says, well, my boy has grown fond of you and wishes to squire for you. When he could squire for anyone else.
Right.
He wishes to squire for you. And Duncan says, yeah, I'll take him, but I don't want to go be like a master of arms at Summerhall.
No.
I want to keep roaming, as a hedge knight.
Yep.
And that's kind of where that phrase half a peasant comes in. And then Makar just kind of laughs and like walks off. Like, you know, but then the next day, egg's standing there. So.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, and then that's really about what more you get out of it.
Yeah, and he's got some prowess as a warrior, too. Makar is he was definitely a boss in that Trial by Seven, and he was a part of the first Blackfyre Rebellion, too, with Baelor, too. So he's a cool king. It's just sort of, he turns a little sour in his old age, and then especially with the loss of his brother, really, by the time he becomes king, he's really kind of put out, I think. You kind of forget that you actually have his brother before him. I should keep mixing up Ares.
Yeah.
Is king, and so the whole time he's kind of gloomy. Doesn't it say he's kind of like at Summerhall just brooding?
Yeah.
Because of the tourney at Ashford.
Yeah. And we know from the from a previous chapter that Makar he marks the anniversary every year.
Yes.
Baelor Breakspear's death. He marks it every year. So suspect that that the reason this chapter is so short is because Gurr didn't want them to write very much about it because, we'll get more with, there's supposed to be seven Duncan Egg books, I believe, is the idea.
Yeah.
And there's three right now. But those are a lot shorter. So hopefully Gurr can actually get those out at some point.
Yeah.
I mean, Winds of Winter should come out first, but hopefully,
hopefully
these can come out as well at some point.
Yeah, another thing I wanted to mention about we talked about Bloodfyre kind of calling forward, that other claimant,
Blood Raven.
Yeah, what did I say?
Bloodfyre.
Oh, sorry, Blood Raven.
Yeah,
calling. Yeah, because I'm talking about Blackfyre.
That's yeah, there you go. Yeah, Blackfyre.
The other Blackfyre to the Great Council.
Yeah,
is I think. From Blood Raven's point of view, the reason he takes the head off of that guy, it kind of mentions it in the chapter, is to set this, what's the word I'm looking for? Like,
tone.
Yeah, set the tone, I guess, to put down anybody else who might have wanted to support this guy. I mean, here's the thing, if he would have stayed over in Essos and were not, I mean, you, as we were reading today, this chapter, everybody that was put forward was really kind of questioned. No one had like a complete like, yeah, we're super happy with these choices. If they wouldn't have taken care of Aenys Blackfyre, then he might have gotten, he gained support, and then during Aang's reign, he might have taken him on, you know?
And you know, something else that's interesting is, so this World of Ice and Fire chapter doesn't mention it, but it is mentioned in, I believe, some chapters, some John or Sam chapters that involve Maester Aemon, and that he talks about, well, they wanted to choose me.
He was
another contender. It's not mentioned in this chapter.
Yep.
It's World of Ice and Fire chapter. So this is, again, it's written from certain perspectives. Maybe the people just forgot. Maybe they said they didn't want to rehash the old material.
Mm-hmm.
But so that is something where you kind of got to look at the whole picture, the
books,
all the books. And Maester Aemon talks about it, and he basically says, like, I didn't want to do it.
He actually says no. He refuses.
Yeah, he refuses.
He's
It might actually be when he's telling John that, like, oh, who he is, is I could have been king,
right? Because he's older, and you know, it just, I mean, he would have just had to, because I guess the Maester vows aren't as difficult to get out of, you know.
Because even think about this, he would still have a claim to the Iron. I mean, Robert takes it, so I'm still the big believer of Robert. But technically speaking, once Rhaegar died, and like once Rhaegar died and Mad King is killed, like there hasn't been an official ceremony, like Robert is now king, Maester Aemon would be king for that like short window of time. Theoretically, had he not been a maester and still just been alive, the line of succession would have immediately fell to him until his death.
Yeah, well,
and he's also at the Night's Watch, so that removes him as well.
Even before, right, because you still have Viserys, but even before or after Viserys, you know, the Mad King.
Right, Viserys, yeah.
Yeah. So, but even, let's say he's too young, still could have been another council situation where they could have said, like, he's too young. I mean, let's say the rebellion's not going on, like you're saying.
Yeah,
he definitely could have still been in the running.
Yeah, gotcha.
You know, because
he still outlives Viserys.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Yeah, even after Viserys, he is still a viable option there. So, which is just radical, absolutely radical. So the whole time he's kind of in play, but I don't know. It's a neat little. I mean, it's short, but this is again another one of those plugs for A Knight of the Seven Kingdoms.
Mm-hmm.
Got to check it out. There's a lot of cool stuff in there. So
yeah.
All right. Anything else on him?
Nope. That's his chapter is really short. So next week is Aegon the Fifth, and there's a lot to cover just in the World of Ice and Fire chapter, and then also some stuff from the Duncan Egg series.
Yeah.
So that'll be a big one.
Okay. All right. Let's dive into. Let me pull up the doc here. Let's get into the reread. Right.
Yeah. So last week we were in Daenerys 3, where Daenerys had learned to embrace her life in Khal Drogo's Khalasar, and she had stood up to Viserys for the first time. And then she also she kind of learns how to ride.
She's coming into her own there.
Yeah.
As Khaleesi and. In all aspects of that,
yeah.
You know?
So. All right. Well, this week we're in Bran 4, but I'll go ahead and read where we were with Bran last time. That was when Bran was in his coma.
Yep.
He was having dreams of falling in a crow, teaching him how to fly. Then he wakes to find himself crippled and decides to name his direwolf Summer. So this week we are in Bran 4. Bran is roused from his depression when he is called to the Great Hall of Winterfell to receive Tyrion Lannister. Despite Robb's rudeness, Tyrion provides plans for a saddle that will allow Bran to ride a horse once more.
Alrighty, so we've divided this chapter, I believe you have here, into three segments here. We've got the first third, Old Nan's Tales, the second one, Cripples, Bastards, and Broken Things, and then My Uncle Is Not Dead.
Yeah.
I like those. Nice.
Hey, thanks.
Sir Matt. Okay. Do you have any big takeaways from this week, or you want to just kind of go piece by piece, or?
Any big takeaways, I would just, this is where, I would say the main theme of this chapter is Bran just realizing kind of the predicament he's in. Because the last time he was asleep, right? And he just kind of wakes up.
Oh, yeah. That's
so now
we
actually get Bran kind of realizing, and I'll actually say this, actually almost argue the show does it better.
Okay.
I just really like the way the show does this stuff with Bran, because just the guy who plays him does a really good job. He's a little kid, you know, at this point, showing just how like upset he is and like realizing what's going on, and I really like Bran, like season one Bran.
Yeah.
And that's just what this chapter is he's realizing, you know, I'm never going to ride a horse again. I'm never going to.
Yeah, reality sets in.
Reality setting in, yeah.
Yeah. I think it's that is definitely one of the major things that, you know, Gurr's trying to communicate or show us here with this character and in his development. Another thing that I thought was huge, and we're going to talk about it, but it's just the old Nan's story.
Oh yeah.
That to me is one of the, like, when I was listening to this again, I was driving around somewhere and I had to like literally stop, pull over, and go back and listen again to the tale that she tells here. Mm-hmm. And I was just kind of like, so we'll get into it, but it's yeah, definitely something we need to spend a little time
on.
And
there's a lot of just little pieces here. Just so, from the first chapter or first page here, Bran watched from his window seat. Wherever the boy went, Grey Wind was the first. Let's talk about Rickon running in the yard. Lopping around to cut him off until Rickon saw him, screamed in delight, and went pelting off in another direction. Shaggy Dog ran at his heels, spinning and snapping if the other wolves came too close. His fur had darkened until he was all black. His eyes were green fire, which I just found that green fire significant.
Yep,
I don't know.
Yep.
Bran's summer came last. He was silver and smoke with eyes of yellow gold that saw all there was to see. Smaller than Grey Wind and more wary, Bran thought he was the smartest of the litter.
Yeah, it is an interesting description, right? You know, that summer is the one that's described as having the eyes that can see all there is to see.
Mm-hmm.
You know, kind of subtle. But,
yeah,
you know, during a reread, you really appreciate that line and you go, wow, okay, that actually makes a lot of sense, you know, in knowing who Bran is and what his role is going to be going forward.
Yeah. Yeah. And then it moves on to him getting some tales from old Nan.
Yeah. He's kind of contemplating just real quick, coming out of his dream. That's the last thing that we heard. He's really kind of
he's thinking about
disgruntled.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, his eyes stung. He wanted to be down there, laughing and running, angry at the thought. Bran knuckled away the tears before they could fall. His eighth name day had come and gone. He was almost a man grown now, too old to cry. It was just a lie, he said bitterly, remembering from the crow from his dream. I can't fly. I can't even run. Now, this I found interesting. Crows are all liars.
Mm-hmm.
Old Nan agreed from the chair where she sat doing her needlework. I know a story about a crow. I just found that crows are all liars.
Oh, we've been saying it episode after episode. You know, crows are tricksy birds.
Yeah.
She's the one who says that actually in earlier chapters.
Yeah.
Or later chapters. I can't remember which one. But it's old Nan who, you know, talks about that as well.
The first thing I thought of wasn't even like the three-eyed crow.
Mm-hmm.
When I heard that crows are all liars, I thought of the Night's Watch.
Breaking their vows?
No. I just thought of, you know, like sometimes we talked specifically about the name, the Night's Watch.
Yeah.
Right, we've talked about what if it actually means something else. What if it's like to protect the, like, you know, I'm not gonna remember who suggested it.
Yeah,
somebody had suggested a while back that what if the Night's Watch was actually meant to protect the others. That was like originally,
yeah,
to, mm-hmm, yeah, kind of a deal. And so I don't know. So I thought of the Night's Watch and like crows are all liars. And what if the actual true purpose of the Night's Watch is a lie?
Yeah,
is built on a lie or something.
Mm-hmm.
So
yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah,
I was just really digging, going down a rabbit hole on that one. So
no, it's what we're supposed to do.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
But then Bran gets kind of upset. I don't want to hear any more stories. And then it kind of starts to describe old Nan.
Yeah. Her toothless smile.
Yeah, she was a very ugly old woman, Bran thought spitefully, shrunken and wrinkled, almost blind, too weak to climb stairs, with only a few wisps of white hair left to cover a mottled pink scalp. No one really knows how old she was, but his father said she'd been called Old Nan even from when he was a boy. She was the oldest person in Winterfell for certain, maybe the oldest person in the Seven Kingdoms. So
maybe, right? You know, because remember on Fallout Friday, we were talking about the Ghost of Highheart,
yeah,
and being compared to even older than, yeah, you know, old Nan.
Well, and Maester Aemon,
yeah,
as well,
Maester
too,
Aemon,
is,
yeah,
is in there. And possibly Melisandre, if, you know, when she comes over. Now, the big theory is that she is Lady Webber.
Yeah.
Of but I was doing the math on that, and I was listening to Knight of the Seven Kingdoms, the second one, Sworn Sword, and I believe Lady Webber is like 40 when Dunk meets her.
Really?
Yeah, I think she's a little bit older.
Oh, I thought she was younger. I know she had a lot of husbands.
She did. Maybe I'm incorrect about that. But at least that's what she was described as. And then once he meets her, he realizes it's different.
Because I think once he meets her, he's shocked about how young she is.
Okay.
But I don't know. It was, yeah. When he first sees her, she's surrounded by other women too, and their descriptions are in there as well.
That's right. Maybe I was just.
But yeah, she is often compared to Lady Webber. So again, that's a connection back to Knight of the Seven Kingdoms.
Right.
So you guys should definitely check that out. So I don't know if you've read this part here, but yeah, she originally comes as a wet nurse, right,
mm-hmm.
for Brandon Stark, whose mother had died birthing him, and we're not really sure which Brandon Stark that was, as Sir Matt had just said. So
right.
She loses both of her sons to the war when King Robert won the throne, and her grandson was killed on the walls of Pyke during Balon's rebellion. Her daughters had also long ago married and moved away, but they also have died.
Mm-hmm.
And so really the only person she has left, you know, that she's related to is Hodor.
Yeah, that we know. Yeah, specifically know of.
Yeah. So, yeah, there's that. And so they get in this conversation about stories and, you know, Bran, he's you know, you can imagine he's upset. He's pissed about, you know, his situation and things.
Yeah.
And, you know, might have liked the stories before because he could get up and go act out those stories in the yard. You know what
mm-hmm.
I mean? He heard of stories of knights, great knights and stuff. Now this stuff just maybe makes him sad.
Yeah.
You know, that's my own thought, you know, as to why he doesn't want to hear her stories.
Yeah, I will say this real quick.
What'd you find? Yeah.
So so she's 26 during the events of Sworn Sword.
Okay. 26.
But if she were alive,
We're talking about Lady Webber.
Lady Webber here. Yeah. If she were alive today, or, you know, during the events of
300,
Game of Thrones,
yeah.
300, she would be 115.
115, that's doable.
That's
old, Dan.
Doable. I think Maester Aemon's older.
Yeah.
So
there you go. There's a lot of...
could be old Nan.
But it's kind of crazy to think that Lady Webber would give up her... See, we don't know what happens.
We don't know. It just says that she just disappears.
Right. I mean, I think she ends up, you know, marrying off some Lannister
guy. She marries
guy
a Lannister, Gerald Lannister, and then she kind of disappears.
Yeah. Yeah. So maybe she runs away for love
right.
with Dunk when he, after Summerhall, all
right.
this stuff.
Right.
Who
so
knows?
So anyway, that is one of the biggest theories as to who old Nan is.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. So anyways, that's good stuff. Maybe we'll do some more stuff on Fallout Friday with that because I think it's neat. We've always said pay close attention to
right.
old Nan when she's
speaking.
Well,
specifically because a lot of people think the reasoning behind it, and we are talking about who old Nan is here, so, you know, is that Hodor is so tall.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And then Hodor's could be the son of someone, right? So,
because
uh-huh. there is a part later in this thing where he talks about, like, how could Hodor be related to her when she's so small?
Yes. Yep.
And it's just kind of, well, maybe he has Duncan the Tall blood in him.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah,
so that would be like her sons, because it's her grandson, I think.
Right,
and so yeah, what her sons could have been. They're not really ever described, but they could have been also
really tall,
super tall.
Yeah,
and so there's that. How does this happen? You know.
Yep.
So, yeah, super cool.
Yeah, there's a lot to it that could make it happen.
Yeah. Okay. So old Dan's wanting to tell him a story. You know, and he's like, I don't care, you know, whose stories they are. I hate them all now. Right. He's upset.
Right.
And she said she knows a story about a boy who hated stories.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and she's and I love this. This is that Lady Webber thing, the click, click, click of the needles, right? Or
mm-hmm.
her, you know, as she's, what is that, knitting, right?
Right.
It's sort of like a spider.
Yeah.
You know, building a web type of thing.
Yeah.
So there's that whole connection back to maybe Lady Webber.
Yeah.
You know, so. Okay, what else we got here? So...
yeah, she lost both her sons to the war when King Robert won the throne, and her grandson was killed on the walls of Pyke during Balon Greyjoy's rebellion. Her daughters had long ago married and moved away. All that was left of her own blood was Hodor.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. And then she starts to tell him a story about, she says, I know a story about a boy who hated stories. Click, click, click. Bran was ready to scream at her. It would never have been the way it had been. He knew the crow had tricked him into flying, but when he woke up He was broken and the world had changed. And then, I believe, is this where she goes, she talks to talk to him about the story about thousands of years ago?
Yeah, so they eventually get in, they get into that story because she starts to talk about the scary stories. I mean, he's thinking a little bit about how he's never going to ride again. He's still kind of feeling, you know, sorry for himself and things, you know. But, you know, and really he's been abandoned. He's talking about where everybody's at, you know.
Right.
His mother's away. You know, his father's away. His sisters are away. He's left with Rob and Rickon.
Right.
You know, and that's basically it. So, yeah. And Theon Greyjoy.
Yeah, yeah.
So.
Yeah, I could tell you the story about Brandon the Builder, old Nan said. That was always your favorite. Thousands and thousands of years ago, Brandon the Builder had raised Winterfell, and some said the Wall. Bran knew the story, but it had never been his favorite. Maybe one of the other Brandons had liked that story. Sometimes Nan would talk to him as if he were her Brandon, the baby she had nursed all those years ago, and sometimes she confused him with his uncle Brandon, who was killed by the Mad King before Bran was even born. She had lived so long, Mother had told him once, that all the Brandon Starks had become one person in her head, which that right there is what many people point to, the whole that and what we know from the show, possibly also from the books. Is that all the Brandons, there's this big theory, all the Brandons are one person, right? Or that Bran somehow, you know, jacks up time and then it all gets kind of connected there. Anyway,
right.
So he goes on to say, that's not my favorite. My favorites are the scary ones.
And she says, she'll tell him a scary story.
Oh, yeah. Oh, my sweet summer child, you know, what do you know of fear?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, fear is for the winter, my little lord, when the snows fall 100 feet deep and the ice wind comes howling out from the north. Fear is for the long night, when the sun hides its face for years at a time, and little children are born and live and die all in darkness, when the direwolves grow gaunt and hungry, and the White Walkers move through the woods. You mean the others, Brandon said curiously. The others, old Nan agreed. And then she basically just goes on to tell him the story of the long night, mm-hmm. thousands of years ago.
Right. Yeah. So now this is where, like as I said at the top of the reread portion, I think this is one of the most significant parts of this chapter. So the bit that I wanted to read is actually really about how the long night comes to an end.
Okay.
You know, so she goes on, she talks about how this is back before the days of the Andal. So if you think back to A World of Ice and Fire, we've talked about the Dawn Age and the First Men and the coming of the Andals and things like that. So before the coming of the Andals, you know, so this is the long night, which is right in between.
And the Age,
you know,
of Heroes.
All of that. Yeah, exactly.
And that's what the prequel show is going to be about.
Right, exactly. Exactly. So that's pretty neat. Let's see, though. Yet here in the fastness of the woods, the children still lived in their wooded cities and hollow hills, and the faces of the trees kept watch. So as cold and death filled the earth, the last hero determined to seek out the children mm-hmm. in the hopes that their ancient magics could win back what the armies of the men had lost. And so this is where you get into that...
the last hero thing.
Yeah.
The World of Ice and Fire mentions this too, is that there's a potential that there's different names. You have Azor Ahai, the prince mm-hmm. who was promised, and this last hero.
Yeah.
And they all could be the same person. They could all be different.
Different.
People.
Yep. Exactly.
What if that's the three heads of the dragon?
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
And
if the three heads of the dragon actually has anything to do with it, right? That could be you and I were talking about this on Fallout Fridays. That could actually have something completely different.
Sure. Oh, yeah.
Right.
For sure. Yeah. Yeah. Now, something that I wanted you guys to kind of focus in on here for maybe follow-up Friday or just get your guys' thoughts in the group on. He's described as, he sets out into the Deadlands with a sword and a horse and a dog and a dozen companions. For years he searched until he despaired of ever finding the children. So he's searching for years and years and years. He can't find them in their secret cities. One by one, his friends died. And his horse, and finally even his dog. So, I mean, this is again, winter has come, and it's the long night, and he's right. Desperately searching for an answer. His sword even freezes so hard that the blade snapped when he tried to use it, and the others smelled the hot blood on him and came silent on his trail, stalking him with packs of pale white spiders, big as hounds. And then the story kind of gets cut off.
Mm-hmm.
Bang, the door opens. Yeah. So to me, I want to know, what's the end of that story? Right? I mean, it's intentional that it's cut off there. Does he ever find the children? You know, is this the same hero who actually ends up, you know, beating back the Long Night. And there is more evidence later on.
Yeah, yeah.
But
the children are mentioned again.
Yeah.
In this chapter.
Yes, they are.
Yeah, yeah. We'll get to that. But I found that interesting too. It's just not something I'd thought of. But yeah, I mean, from what we know from the World of Ice and Fire, and this is we just need more old Nan tales.
Well, so think about this tale. I think there are threads on this. You know, he sets out with his 12 companions and a dog. You know, and he's
the
got
hound.
Exactly that kind of stuff.
So people like what we see in the show, which could happen in the books, where Jon Snow has to go north to get a white to bring back.
He's got his companions with him.
Could be similar.
Possibly has his dog or his dire wolf. You know what I mean? So this is a tale that's thousands and thousands of years old. That's been passed down from, you know, orally been passed down. And so it's like, if this is something where Ger is trying to be, have like a cycle or a wheel that turns, and like these things will come again in a new age, you know, is there, you know, what would be the equivalent of this story? You know, who is the hero in our story? And does he have companions? Does he travel with a dog? You know what I mean? It's just kind of something to think about, something to chew on and what have you. So,
But Maester Luwin is the one who opens the door. Bran, we need you to come down. Long story short, it's Tyrion Lannister.
Yeah.
He gets down there. Rob's sitting in his dad's seat. Rob was seated in his father's high seat, wearing ringmail and boiled leather, and the stern face of Rob the Lord. Theon Greyjoy and Hallis Mullen stood behind him. A dozen guardsmen lined the gray stone walls beneath two tall, narrow windows. In the center of the room, the dwarf stood with his servants and four strangers in the black of the Night's Watch. Bran could sense the anger in the hall the moment that Hodor carried him through the doors.
Mm-hmm.
And then they go on to say, the Night's Watch are welcome to stay. Tyrion Lannister, maybe not so much.
Yeah, I think it's neat. I mean, they're obviously the relationship between Winterfell and the Night's Watch, very evident here. Mm-hmm. He knows to just greet them immediately, give them, you know, quarter and let them, you know, a hot meal and all that good stuff. Hospitality,
mm-hmm.
You know, for sure. So very warm greeting for them. The interesting part here, and you might be reading this in a second, but the fact that he has a sword open on his lap, laid out, is basically kind of a hostile sign.
Yeah, even Bran knew what it meant to greet a guest with an unsheathed sword.
Yeah.
Any man of the Night's Watch, the dwarf repeated, but not me. Do I take your meaning, boy? Rob stood and pointed at the little man with his sword. I am the lord here, while my mother is and father away, Lannister. I am not your boy. If you are a lord, you might learn a lord's courtesy, the little man replied, ignoring the sword point in his face. Your bastard brother has all your father's graces, it would seem. John, Bran grasped out from Hodor's arms, and so then they get some news on John, and he says, "I think is it Jorn who says Alistair Thorne's Bane?"
Yeah. And they're always excited to hear a little news from their brother up there and things, and they don't realize the closeness between Tyrion.
Right.
They're about to see, and they're about to see, you know, how cool and how Tyrion doesn't really see things as like this house or that house. He understands all of that, but in every house there's good and bad, and in every house there's, you know, friends and foes. So he's just very intelligent in that regard. So, you know,
It's interesting to think because remember I was thinking about this and I was like, oh yeah, because the last thing it's interesting how Ger kind of tells this, because from Rob's perspective he's a Lannister. And Rob was there when Catelyn said, I'm leaving. It's the Lannisters. We don't trust them.
Yep.
But at this point, we know from Cat that, it's Tyrion's knife. Air quotes, Tyrion's knife. Right?
Yep.
From Baelish. That's what Cat believes.
True.
So the next time we see Tyrion is actually, he believes he's when he's getting captured.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. By Catelyn.
Yeah.
And so it's just interesting. And so,
yeah, you almost wonder, it doesn't say that there's any correspondence like that she wrote back or anything or filled in. I don't think she can trust a message, you know, back to her son. So,
if Rob had known, do you think Rob would have just? I think Rob would have seized him right there.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
It's a good thing he didn't know.
Yeah, it is a good thing he did.
Yeah, because it could have been a big deal. Who knows what he would have done? You know, the other thing that kind of heals and helps here is that, so they don't really know that Bran is awake. Sort of, you know.
No,
I mean, did they get some news or did they not? I think they. I can't remember. Do at this point do. Kat and...
you know, I don't even know if we ever...
Did they send word that they were
with? I don't
know if
we ever...
I think they did.
I mean, I'm sure they would. I'm sure they would have to. Plus, Rob goes down to see... Well, Rob goes down to meet with Kat, right? You know, when Rob is there. So I'm sure at some point she knows. But I don't know...
Yeah, it just dawned on me.
If it is ever told to Eddard Stark that... Or Kat... I don't think it's ever in text that Elbran woke up.
Huh. I can't. If it is, guys, let us know. I mean, in the group there on Facebook.
I mean, I'm sure they would. I mean, I'm Kat would definitely have to know.
Yeah, I'm just trying to remember.
Wouldn't Yoren also know? Because Yoren stops at Winterfell, and then he goes down.
Yeah.
And he tells Ned about.
Sure. Yep.
Brandon, probably say, yeah, your other son.
I'm sure it's in there somewhere. I just can't remember where it's at. But anyways, the point is that I think, you know, knowing that he is alive and that he did survive and is awake, even though he's a cripple,
right,
definitely kind of lessens the blow, right? You didn't you don't get to say like you killed my son. You know, you've crippled him, but you haven't, you know. So there's that. Okay, so he kind of goes on. Tyrion goes on to kind of describe a gift that he's brought. You know, he conveys a message on from Jon and
a saddle.
Yeah,
he could ride.
And he wants to help out. So yeah, he has a saddle.
And that goes about the same way it does in the show.
Yeah.
Although the next chapter, spoilers, I guess, is that we see Bran riding, right?
That's, yeah.
Do we see Bran riding in the show?
Yeah. Yeah, we do.
We do?
Yeah, remember he almost gets captured by, what's her name?
Osha.
Yeah.
That's
season one. I don't remember it's at, but yeah. Yeah, he's definitely riding around and they cut his leg and he's,
that's
doesn't
right.
feel it, you know?
That's right. It is in the show.
Yeah. But it's kind of taken as like almost like a trick here. Rob doesn't know what to think of Tyrion. And I love this. This is where you said like he has this soft spot for
cripples,
you know,
bastards, and broken things.
There it is. Yeah. So and so he's basically saying the saddle is very similar to the one that he uses.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because you imagine being a dwarf, how is he supposed to control this horse? And so he's really giving these things some thought.
Yeah, and Maester Luwin, he gives him the plans, and Maester Luwin's all about it. Oh yeah, this could work. This could
work.
Yeah,
and he says
you're gonna have to get a smart horse. Teach it from the get go.
That's right.
Not to be raised like a normal horse.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Which I'm sure is what they've done in the past with actual horses. I mean,
yeah,
I'm sure
yeah.
you've had.
There's just different ways to train them.
Yeah,
absolutely.
I don't know much about horseback riding.
They
kind of freak me out. I don't like animals that are bigger than me, man. Especially draft horses.
Oh, huge. One kick from that, you are
dead.
You're dead, man.
Freak me out. Like,
I know. They are huge.
Every time I go to the fair, like, oh, let's go see. I'm like, oh, no, I'm good.
Yeah. Yeah, I know.
I like dogs, you know?
Right. Yeah.
Cats.
Yeah.
I don't even like fish.
I've never been around horses too much. I've ridden a horse. Have you ever rode a horse?
Yeah, once, and it was terrifying.
I've ridden them several times. I actually used to ride for a little bit when I was younger. Yeah. So our neighbor had a horse, and
they're cool.
Yeah.
I think horses are super cool, and I know lots of people are all about it.
I'll tell you what, when you feed them, you make sure your fingers are like flat.
They'll chew your finger off one day.
They'll bite your finger.
I'm out.
Yeah.
They're pretty nice. Aren't horses pretty nice?
Yeah, they're pretty nice. Yeah, for the most part. I mean, except for I've been over at Rhode Island where there's like wild horses, though.
What?
Yeah, out on the islands, man. Untamed.
Just
running wild.
I'm sure I guess I didn't know wild horses still like existed in some places.
Yeah, they're very much protected over there too on the East Coast because of that. I mean, I think
are horses naturally from where they brought over?
I mean, I don't know. It's in
I guess they'd be natural.
Natural, yeah. I'd say the natural because Native Americans and stuff.
Yeah.
Been here for a long time. I don't know.
Just weird to think about, yeah.
Yeah. So anyway.
Sorry, guys. Sometimes we go down rabbit holes, but,
hey,
you know.
The horse, man. Yeah. Gurus is one of his, I don't know which horse he's talking about, but the horse that changes its sex. It was a male horse, and then it was, or maybe it changes colors.
Oh, he just
in his editing process, he's talking about like mistakes and stuff. It's neat to hear him kind of talk about the horse that either changes sex, I think.
Yeah.
So, but Bran's like, you know, will I truly be able to ride with this saddle? They're all still kind of in disbelief, and he says, "You will, I swear to you, boy. On horseback, you will be as tall as any of them."
Yeah.
So, you know, that's exciting.
Yeah.
Just to kind of, you know, because right now he's dependent upon Hodor to move him around, and you know,
and so. This part is not in the show, and I kind of wish it. I wish it were. And so then this scene kind of ends with the wolves,
direwolves
coming in, and they basically just kind of like growl and walk closer and closer to Tyrion, and then they kind of get him to stop.
Yeah.
And it's just to kind of show just
they do
how,
bite him, though, don't they? Yeah.
Well, I think they kind of rip his.
Yeah,
they,
it's just on his arm, you know. But they definitely get a hold of him.
Right.
Yeah, and they call their dogs off and basically their wolves off.
Yeah.
And Tyrion is he thanks Bran, first of all, for being the one. The rest, the other two, like, Rob freezes.
Kind of freaks out. Yeah, he doesn't know what to do. Yeah.
Yeah.
And so, they ask him if he's hurt, and he says, you know, not very much,
right.
Although my britches seem a little damp.
That's right.
My dignity is hurt a little bit. But yeah. But it sets up, actually, and this comes up to play a lot later. There's like a chapter where Maester Luwin is with Bran and Rickon, and they're like down in the crypts, and Rickon, or isn't it Shaggy Dog, almost like kills Maester Luwin on accident.
Well, he kind of attacks.
Kind of attacks it. Yeah, kind of jumps out.
Yeah.
And they just talk about how wild these wolves are, especially Shaggy Dog.
Yeah.
Because Rickon's a little kid. He doesn't know how to teach it to not attack. And I think they almost hurt the Frey boys when the Frey boys are there.
That's why they're put away in the gods.
Yep.
World. Yep. Yep. So they call him off, and after that, I think Rob feels very bad, and Tyrion says, "I will now be leaving and taking off."
Yeah.
And he tries to offer him some, you know, like, you know, well, before you go, he sheathes his sword, and he has a little conference with Maester Luwin.
Yeah. If you want to stay, you can. He's like, "Oh, I think I'll just go find a brothel outside town."
Yeah. Spare me your false courtesies, boy.
Yep.
Yeah.
So yeah, my favorite line from Tyrion in A Dance of Dragons, where he's asking everyone at those first couple of chapters, he's asking everyone, he's like, "Where are the horse?" Like, where do the whores go? He's like, he's walking around asking
where
everyone.
Do the whores go? Yeah. Oh,
and, like, man. No one seems to give him a straight answer.
Yeah, yeah. And then, so, I think, does Bran go back up and take a nap first, or does he go right to the dinner where they have the Night's Watch? Let's see.
A moment.
Yeah, he goes up to the bed. Yeah, Summer takes him up there, and he and Hodor.
Right.
Old Nan's asleep,
mm-hmm.
right?
Yeah.
And,
yeah, he does. He has a dream, and he's climbing again. Higher and higher he climbed, and he paused to look down. His head swam dizzy. The earth was 1,000 miles beneath him, and he could not fly. He could not fly. He waited there until his heart had stopped pounding, until he could breathe, and he began to climb again. There was no way to go but up. Far above him, outlined against a vast pale moon, he thought he could see the shapes of gargoyles. His arms were sore and aching, but he dared not rest. He forced himself to climb faster. The gargoyles watched him ascend. Their eyes glowed red as hot coals in a brazier. Perhaps once they had been lions, but now they were twisted and grotesque. Bran could hear them whispering to each other in soft stone voices, terrible to hear. He must not listen, he told himself. He must not hear. So long as he did not hear them, he was safe. But when the gargoyles pulled themselves loose from the stone and padded down the side of the tower to where Bran clung, he knew it was not safe after all. I didn't hear. He swept as they came closer. I didn't.
Mm-hmm.
And I think he's thinking about, like, I didn't hear.
Don't
Jamie.
Don't hurt me.
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
Because I didn't hear anything. Yeah.
Right.
So, kind of coming back, it's interesting how in some of these dreams he goes back and forth between being able to climb, and climbing being his focus, and flying.
Flying, yep.
You know? So it's still that struggle of really which
Blood
path
Raven
do you take.
And Three-Eyed Crow.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Well, that or just his nature.
Right.
His dire wolf, having wolf dreams.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I actually think that's a bit of his dilemma, is that he's having he's being sent or communicated to, you know, with by, well, let's just say the Three-Eyed Crow.
Yeah.
And then maybe that whole wolf dream nature, you know.
And maybe maybe that's somewhere where it goes with Bran, is that maybe the idea of the Three-Eyed, and this may be something, as we always go back to the Three-Eyed Crow stuff.
Yeah.
Think about this for a second. So here's an idea. So maybe we talk, and we see this in the show, right? In the show, Blood Raven, Three-Eyed Crow, may not be Blood Raven in the show, but regardless, Thread Raven says kind of like, well, you can't actually do anything here, and we talked before about, well, maybe Bran can, because Bran, it seems like, actually
do anything, like, where you mean, like in the cave,
like you could say something to your dad, but he would hear whispers, he wouldn't be able
okay,
to, like,
so in
reach
the past,
out to the past,
yeah, right? I got you, okay,
but Bran, as we see, can, right, because he influences Hodor, and we've kind of talked about this before, is maybe that is the difference with Bran, is that Bran isn't just a greenseer or like green jeans. Bran has like a lot of powers mm-hmm. kind of going into it.
Yeah, yeah.
In that he's got a dire wolf, so he's like a warg, and he has green dreams, mm-hmm. like, and, you know, he has the blood of the first man being a Stark, as mm-hmm. opposed to, say, like, Blood Raven, who is, you know, of Valyrian descent.
Yeah.
So maybe, like, maybe... total theory here, like the Three-Eyed Crow is like, oh, I'll get him, and then maybe Bran's actually even too powerful for the Three-Eyed Crow, so it's kind of like, I don't know, just a weird thought there.
Yeah, no, I think it's a good thought, because what I was thinking is that the so that's one that you have, what Sir Matt said there, I'm gonna go a completely different way,
okay.
Here, which is the idea that I sometimes think the Dire Wolf is in its nature, and, you know, it talks about the bond between it was probably 4 or 5, maybe 6 weeks ago. We were talking about the skin changers and warging, right. and green seers and all that good stuff. And I have a doc I was going to pull up here, but I'll just try to do it from memory. You know, the dire wolf, the relationship with the wolf there, it's like you're married to the
right.
wolf, you know, and you have a real strong relationship. And the closer he gets to the Three-Eyed Crow, the further away his dire wolf goes.
Right.
And so it's super close to him now, stays by his side, but as he gets up there, it goes out further and further. It hunts, and he has those dreams, and he can still slip into his dire wolf, but it, for some reason, is not, you know, with him in the cave, right? It's not there next to him doing his thing. So there's that proximity seems to be somewhat symbolic to me, you know,
right.
and that he, there's something going on there. You know, it's also the idea of... the dreams seem to be, they just seem to be conflicting, you mm-hmm. know? When he speaks with Ghost, or he first kind of shows up, this is much later on, we had a raven about this, I think.
Yeah.
Coming up this Friday.
We've got to research that a little bit more, but it's really interesting.
Very interesting. I won't give any of that away, but when he interacts with Ghost is not too happy. Like, Ghost snarls and is not, I guess... doesn't interact well. It doesn't seem like it, you know, that he's very accepting of Bran's invasion into his
right.
his dream. And it's actually Jon in
right.
Ghost, you know, is who Bran is talking to. But something about Ghost and his nature doesn't trust what's happening.
Right.
You know, and so, I don't know. I think they're two separate things, and it's sort of like Bran might be, there might be this war going on inside of him, you know.
Well, I also feel like there is a difference between Jon's wolf and the others.
Yeah, yeah, for sure.
Because Jon's relationship with Ghost, and maybe it's just because we get more about it, just seems stronger and different than the others.
Yeah.
And we know Ghost is obviously different. He was, you know, the runt of the litter. He's an albino,
mm-hmm.
right? So he is separate, just as Jon is kind of different from his Stark, you know, half-brothers, whatever.
Yeah, yeah.
Air quote there. But
right.
So I don't know. So it's just... interesting.
Yeah, it is something to pay attention to as we continue throughout this reread, you know.
Yeah,
so we learn more every chapter, man.
Mm-hmm.
It's great.
Yeah, so all right, then the chapter that's kind of,
yeah, it concludes with the
it goes back, and then they're talking about the Night's Watch are talking, they're talking about Benjen Stark.
Mm-hmm.
And they say he went out ranging, he's been lost, and one of them says
He's probably dead.
He's probably dead. I mean, to be honest, my uncle's not dead. Rob said loudly, anger in his tones. He, do you hear me? My uncle is not dead. His voice rang against his own walls, and suddenly Bran was afraid. And I just thought, there's one line here. Bran says, "The children will help him." He blurted, "The children of the forest." And then they go on to say, like, the children are, you know, stories. And then it pretty much goes on to end with Rob taking him back up. Rob's kind of crying, and he talks about, we'll get you a horse, we'll go on an adventure. And that's kind of where it goes. But the idea, real quick, going back to the children will help him,
mm-hmm.
could be foreshadowing to Cold Hands, if Cold Hands is Benjen.
Right. The unfortunate thing, and I said it a couple weeks ago, is that Ger said it's not.
Yeah, but it may no longer be. Maybe what he meant was he's no longer Benjen Stark. He is now Cold Hands.
Right. I think somebody asked him directly, though, is Benjen Stark Cold Hands? And I get what you're saying, in that no, he's not, you know, he said no.
Right.
That's the,
but,
I, I know. Yeah, we don't. But he also said Rhaenys Targaryen, you know, died and truly did die, and I believe she could be, you know, Cirella Sand.
Well,
so,
maybe Rhaenys Targaryen did die, and maybe she's living as a new
as Cirella Sand. I know it's Cirella all. Sand, yeah. And also, he can lie to us if he wants to. It's his story. You know, he doesn't have to give all the answers.
I mean, the thing is, a lot of people, so many online people are always like, "There's so many characters that are there's so many secret identities in this." In this book,
right.
in these series, that
because you know we for a long time until I had read again this was this summer at some point where I read that Ger had said Cold Hands is not Benjen Stark. Up until that point, we had theorized like crazy about it, and
it is yeah
same actor you know so
yeah
but I think you know
and that could be something where they blend kind of two characters together.
Yeah, for sure. But I don't know. It's just in the book, I can see where like Leif says, you know, he died a long time ago. You know what I mean? And that, well, how long is a long time ago? And that he's that the others or that the you know the Whites had killed him a long time ago and stuff like that. And so it kind of who else could he be is my question. Who is Cold Hands? And so Cold Hands could just be whoever. I actually kind of think in the book, Benjen's still alive and he's coming back. Like, just himself, straight up himself, coming back. Because they allude to it in this chapter. Yoren kind of says, when Bran blurts out that the children would help him, he's like, Maester Luwin says, no, Bran,
no,
a thousand
gone,
years ago,
yeah.
But he's like, you'd be surprised. You know, you don't know.
Right.
He goes, you don't know what's up in the Haunted Forest. He goes, we've seen things up there and heard things that you wouldn't believe. You know? So he kind of validates Bran in a sense and says that, you know, basically, this little lord could be right, you know, because there's a lot going on up there. We know later on that it is basically true that they are available up there. But I don't know whether I trust the children or not still.
Yeah.
You know, so
especially well, you know,
after reading old Dan's,
right.
you know, tale today.
Well, maybe. Well, think about this. So for the show, we see Cold Hands / Benjen. He helps Bran and like Mira and Jojen there. And then he helps them. Kind of again, and then when he helps John, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then when John is being attacked, so it could actually not be Cold Hands that does that. It could actually just be Benjen that does that. But they kind of blend them together because they didn't have the time to finish whatever this actual Cold Hands character will be.
Gotcha. Yeah. Okay.
Because we've seen them do that a lot in the show. You kind of merge two characters, and that was a clear thing.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. Because if it's not, if Benjen is not Cold Hands, and I, to me, if you said no. He's not Benjen.
Like,
well, he is now this Cold Hands character.
Yeah.
Like Benjen Stark died a long time ago, and he's kind of how Bran says, "Well, I'm not Bran. I'm the Three-Eyed Raven in the show."
Yeah.
Maybe that's like the same thing.
Gotcha. Yeah.
Is what he meant.
Yeah.
But because otherwise you're gonna have to tell two stories, and you don't have time to do that in the show, and you know. That could also be another reason as to why Winds of Winter is taking so long, because you have these these characters that he's got. Well, I got to do this. I got to finish
Sir
this
Matt?
Benjen. I got to finish this Benjen thread, and I got to finish this Cold Hand thread.
Have I free years?
I know you. That's what you've been.
And
saying.
I love that, like, because now, like that we're in this together. It's like I think for years we'd be watching the show. I'm like, dude, there is no way he can finish this in like two books. I was in my head. I'm like. How's he gonna do this? He got so many characters and threads and stuff, but you can see he can kill characters in one, you know, foul swoop.
Well, think about how many characters in the show died at the Sept of Baelor.
That's what I'm saying. If he
does the entire Tyrells and Kevin Lannister in the show, who is alive in the book,
right?
He's dead in the books.
But he can take out the Tyrells. Done.
Right.
You know?
But maybe there's other characters there as well. You know.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. So, anyways, okay. Well, that's basically the chapter, though.
That's basically it. Yeah.
Good, you know, Bran chapters. Like I said, I read through his point of view. You know, and I'm kind of working back through a couple other characters here. I've kind of bounced around a little bit.
Oh,
but,
absolutely. Yeah.
You know, it's
sometimes I've been lately I've just been kind of just picking a chapter at random
mm-hmm.
and just listening to the chapter.
Yeah,
and just kind of trying to absorb just that chapter.
Yeah.
Because I read the main show chapter every week. In succession. And sometimes I'll even go back a couple chapters and then go forward a couple.
Yeah.
Just because I just leave it on.
Oh, yeah.
And just that way I kind of get it in kind of context.
Oh, yeah.
But, during the week sometimes I just pick like a character and I'll listen to like a little bit of their thread or something just to try and hear parts, you know, and just listen to it differently.
Yeah. I mean, it's always worth a good refresher to go back and hear some of these things because, I mean, I think most of us have Game of Thrones down pretty well. That's why I love Fallout Friday, because we dive into Dance of Dragons and Storm of Swords everything, and everything. And it's so challenging but great, because we can jump right into those things. So,
and the thing I also love about Fallout Friday is that it causes me to go, like last week it was like Ghost of Hyar, just a character I haven't thought about in a long time.
Yeah.
Just like, oh, yeah, yeah, I remember that, yeah. Yeah. But now it's like, wow, now I need to go back, look at those theories. That causes me to think about other things.
Right.
Like, I'm working on a big theory right now, and it has something to do with Ghost of High Heart now, because somebody mentioned it, caused me to think about things.
Yep.
It's great.
I think I'm going to post my Rhaenys Targaryen is Sirella Sand. Just why I'd mentioned it in, I read the whole thing, actually, but I think I'm just going to go ahead and post the text in our Facebook group, just to kind of get some other conversations going in there. So if you haven't joined the Facebook group yet, definitely need to check that out, so we can get your thoughts and theories on, you know, just various characters and stuff.
Yeah, we've had a handful of people join already, and it's going to keep growing and more people posting. So
okay, now time to, I think we're done with the reread here. Let's jump into Cinda Raven. And this week, we actually have one that we're going to dive on to. Go down a little bit of a rabbit hole here for you guys. Mm-hmm. This is Sir Jared of House Gebhardt sent us a message here, a raven. Hello, sirs. I had a question. It has to do with Tywin Lannister, specifically from the book World of Ice and Fire. We know Tywin was a good friend was good friends with the Mad King until their falling out. We also know that from the book, the only thing that seemingly makes Tywin happy is his wife, as the Maester said it. I even heard her make him laugh on three separate occasions. So, you know, obviously Tywin was, that was sort of the joy of his life, right? So my question, this is from Sir Jared here. The question is, do you think Tywin had already made up his mind to turn on the Mad King when the king mocked Tywin's wife? So before the king mocks his wife, has he already decided to turn on him? Or, you know, just waited for the right opportunity? Or do you believe, like many, that he waited to see who was going to win the war before he picked sides? I think, given Tywin's lust for revenge, and very brutal revenge at that, that the slight the Mad King made would be enough to plant the seed of revenge that bared fruit at Robert's rebellion. All right. So Jared, good to hear from you, actually.
Yeah, good. That's very good. I would say, you know, in the World of Ice and Fire, that Aerys, the second part where it talks all about, it's really mostly, it's just all about Tywin Lannister.
Yeah, it is. The hate of it, he was
there's
the
so game. There's so many things, and it just kind of, it's like his paranoia starts growing and growing, even towards like Rhaegar and his son and his daughter, or excuse me, his wife, Rhaella. Yeah. He's like, she's not giving me a thing. I think that, I don't know if it was that moment. I would say more so the bigger thing was when he put Jaime in the Kingsguard.
Yeah, that's a big deal. That for sure was a problem.
Yeah.
And just for those of you who don't know, I mean, at one point,
they were like best friends.
They are best friends. They grew up together, and he names him Hand of the King. And what starts to happen is people say, well, the true king, the true ruler of the Seven Kingdoms is Tywin.
Right.
Tywin's doing all this good stuff. He's banking some good money, making good decisions. He's the real ruler here. You know, basically, Aerys is just king in name, you know. Once he heard that, he started to try to undo what some of Tywin was, all of his good deeds. I mean, Tywin would lower taxes, and then the king would secretly raise them, but then he'd go into the city publicly and say, like, what's the problem? They'd be like, well, he would make it seem like Tywin had raised the taxes, even though he had just cut them. He was going behind his back and undoing things, and then coming in trying to be the hero. Oh, cool. Well, I'll redo what Tywin just did, but I'll do it, and you'll see that it was me and not him.
Right.
You know. So there's that division.
And there's a part where Tywin tries to leave.
Yeah.
Says, I want to retire, and Mad King won't let him.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. So he's in a bit of a pickle, for sure. And then from then on out, like, I think just kind of like a slow erosion over time. He starts to lose his mind, as you said, Sir Matt. He gets paranoid, and then, you know, there's a lot of animosity between the two.
Right.
But I think the slight towards his wife and his son, he is ready at that point, especially after, think about that, because the slight had already happened to his wife, and then you pick his son, you know, to be in the Kingsguard, even though Jaime wanted to be in the Kingsguard.
You know, though... My thing about Tywin, and especially at the end, I do think maybe Tywin did still hold out because he thought maybe that the Targaryens would win. Mm-hmm. And I actually think that his plan would have been, let's say the Targaryens would look like they were going to win, and he did actually just go help fortify King's Landing or go show up at the Trident.
Yeah.
I think that had the tide started looking like the Targaryens were going to win, he would have looked at the situation. And because remember, he tried to marry Cersei to Rhaegar.
Yeah.
And Cersei wanted to marry Rhaegar.
Yes.
Is that he would have looked at the situation and been, well,
Lyanna died in childbirth.
Lyanna died in childbirth. Yep. And he already didn't want to be married. He, you know, his marriage to Elia Martell wasn't working, so yeah. You can still marry Cersei.
Yep. Oh yeah.
And then he would look like, I just saved it. I just say, you know, I just saved you. Like, now you should let Cersei marry Rhaegar.
Yep.
So it's a win-win. That's probably what he would have done.
I wouldn't even be surprised if he would have plotted with Rhaegar just to, right. to say your father's, you know, mad and out of his mind. How can we? He's getting older. Right. Let's just
it was the tourney at Harrenhal. It was the tourney at Harrenhal where the Mad King shows up.
Yeah, unexpectedly.
It was believed that Rhaegar was going to say, all right, I want to like overthrow my dad, or it's just time.
We need to find a way to remove him from power because he's doing things that are could possibly he could have blown up all of King's Landing. You know, it's just like crazy, the Red Keep and what have you. So, yeah, I don't know. I think it's a good question, Sir Jared. I just don't know.
Do you think that Rhaegar knew that his dad had planned on blowing up the city?
I don't think so, because I think if that were the case, he would have, I think Sir Arthur Dayne and those guys would have been more involved, because those are his good friends. I think unless they told Jaime to keep an eye on him, and if he does decide to do this, kill him.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? That could have been an order from the prince, you know, or
right.
or the commander of the Kingsguard. You know what I mean? So... Yeah, I think if he knew that, well, if he might actually know that he's stockpiling that stuff, and that might have been something that I can't remember when he starts to stockpile it.
Right.
The Dragonfire.
The Wildfire, yeah. Dragonfire. Yeah. Something. Yeah.
But I don't know when he stockpiled it, and if that was before or after the tourney of Harrenhal. You know, feels like it was a lot. Like they had been working on it for a while, so he might have known before he went to the tourney at Harrenhal. You know what I mean? Rhaegar.
Rhaegar. Yeah.
So that might have been something that kind of tipped his, you know. The decision to plot against his father.
Right.
So,
because
if he did, and it's, again, it's all rumor and speculation, but it seems likely.
Right. I mean, because my question is, why is Rhaegar, you know, the Lyanna thing?
Mm-hmm.
Why did Rhaegar take Lyanna when he did mm-hmm. without securing? Because if he had taken his dad down, then he's king. Then he can say, well, I don't want to be married to Elia Martell anymore. And, you know, Targaryen kings, they can pretty much do whatever they want. He can say, I want to marry Lyanna Stark, and no one's going to challenge him because he's then king. I mean, yeah, Robert Baratheon would be ticked, but
it's
then
a great
it's,
question.
But then Robert Baratheon would just be like, what would, then it's only House Baratheon that's ticked. You know what I mean? Like,
right. And what if Lyanna comes out and says to her father, now here's the problem, is that, like, the Mad King
had already killed.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Had he already?
Yeah.
Yeah. No. That he takes Lyanna.
Right.
And they then go, they're killed.
Yeah.
So he could have. So what is Rhaegar?
I know.
That's why doesn't he wait until
I know.
Until after the tourney and then become king, like you said, that marriage is already annulled.
This is all kind of part of the big theory I'm working on a big theory about Summerhall, Rhaegar, and the idea of fire and blood.
Yeah.
And it's all kind of be.
There had to have been a sign for him that it was time to act, and maybe he had a timeline or something to meet, and so he had to get Lyanna. You know, I don't know. But it just, there was a better way to go about that, wasn't there? Or is it, because to me, here's a question for you, Sir Matt. Is it just passion? Is it true passion? Does he see her and he just falls in love with her?
Could be.
Because if that's the case, then fine. That's how it all happened and whatnot. But if he's being this, you know, if he's got this stuff planned out and mapped out, that seems like a bad decision.
Right.
You know what I mean?
See, it's going to be told to us.
Yeah.
I think the show is definitely going to do a flashback, whether it's mm-hmm. a brand flashback or just a flashback. I actually hope, it'd be cool if it was a brand thing, just because that way you involve brand.
Yeah.
But I would actually... Because we did get the Maggie the Frog Cersei thing that was just like a historic scene.
Yeah.
That's like the only kind of just historic kind of scene I can remember.
Yeah. right.
in the show. I hope, because we haven't gotten any of these, that we really get either a Rhaegar or Lyanna POV chapter.
Yeah.
It could be a prologue, or I would almost love for it to be like second or third to last chapter.
Yeah.
You know, in like the final book or something where, okay, that's how we just, it's all revealed.
Another thing I would like to see is...
There's so many Rhaegar questions.
Sure. And here's who I think could answer those questions. Howland Reed. If he were at that tourney, like as we know that he was, and he had the conversations he had with Lyanna.
Right.
What if, you know, his daughter has retold the story of the mm-hmm. Laughing Knight. But what if he himself were to have a point of view chapter or have a speak back and think about right. him? Maybe he overheard a conversation. He's in the tents. He's going to thank her, you know, because she had stood up for him and all this kind of stuff. He walks over to a tent. Next thing he knows, he hears Lyanna speaking with Rhaegar and overhears their plans.
Well, I thought that because it's believed Lyanna was the Laughing Knight.
Yeah.
And I thought it was the Laughing Knight competes in this tournament, and then the Mad King gets all nervous and has Rhaegar go chase that person down.
The Laughing Knight?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I don't know if it was being a tent. I thought it was like out in the woods somewhere or something.
Oh, I just mean even like when they come back, like meeting in secret after he crowns her the queen
of beauty.
Yeah. And like perhaps there's a moment during the tourney where they're in tents somewhere secretly, and he's going to... Maybe he's even before she becomes the Knight of the Laughing Tree. If he's going to seek her out, you know what I mean? Then maybe he overheard them in some regard, you know?
Yeah.
Because obviously that's where their relationship starts. I mean, right? I mean,
yeah.
Or did it start before that?
No, I don't think so.
Okay, I don't know. That's kind of so. Then why pick her? You know?
Yeah.
Did he have a... So that's what I'm saying. Did it start before?
Did he need Stark blood?
Did he need Stark blood? Exactly. Lots of questions. Sorry.
That's okay. Wow. It's my favorite. The Rhaegar stuff rabbit holes are my favorite rabbit holes.
Yeah, they are the best. They are the best. All right, let's move on. We'll leave that for... You guys send us some Ravens for Follow-Up Friday.
Discussing the group. Yeah.
That was a preview maybe for some of Follow-Up Friday. We'll dig into the book and pull some text for you guys. Lady Renna has sent us her story. Good evening, Sir Ezra and Sir Matt. Just wanted to drop my story real quick, as it's not particularly long. Game of Thrones first premiered when I was a freshman in college, but I never had any way to watch it, so I never really knew what all the hype was about. Okay, yeah.
Yeah.
Unless you were illegally downloading it like us. All right.
Yeah.
Just kidding. We didn't do that.
I definitely did.
I came across a used set of season one DVDs a couple years later, sat down to watch, but it didn't really hook me, so I didn't pursue the next season. I tried again maybe a year later when my roommate gave me her parents' HBO login info, and this time I made it up to season two, episode two, and again gave up. At this point, I was content to just never watch it. But then, last summer, a friend at work convinced me to catch up before season 7 aired. I was studying for a huge exam for my doctoral program at the time, so I figured there was no better time to to take on the dense series like Game of Thrones. Laugh out loud. I stumbled my way through season 2 and had a hard time remembering who all the characters were, but my friends insisted that I keep going. Good job, friends. Mm-hmm. All right. The Battle of Blackwater is what finally hooked me. I binged the rest and finished catching up just a few days before season 7 started. Now I'm pretty obsessed, and since we have so much time before season 8, I decided to read the books, which is taking forever. I started reading when Second Breakfast became Bend the Knee, and I'm just now on A Storm of Swords. Hopefully I can finish them all before Winds of Winter comes out. Anyways, you guys are awesome, and I love the podcast. You've played a big part in my total immersion into the fandom, and for that, I thank you, Lady Renna.
Well, first of all, thank you.
Yes.
And second of all, I think you have plenty of time to get those books read before Winds of Winter comes out.
Especially if you're on A Storm of Swords. I mean, honestly,
you're almost done. Storm of Swords, I think, is the best great. Book.
And I like it a lot,
it's
actually.
I think it's the best
so
book.
So keep plowing through it. There's a lot of good
it's
stuff
my,
there.
It's my favorite. I think it's the best.
Yeah. Yeah. So... awesome. Thank you. Yeah, that, I mean, my sister actually was kind of the same way. And like when you first start, it's like, who are all these people?
Right.
And you need your friends just to say, keep pushing forward. Even, even when you first start reading, you're like, what?
Right.
For the longest time. I mean, Jorah and Jorah Mormont.
I didn't know. It took me like to season three
to
figure.
Wait a second.
To figure out. I was like, wait, hold on a second.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it's so funny when it happens, too, because you're like, they're related. Like,
oh,
what?
Yeah, Mormon. Oh, is that, yeah.
Is that the same, you know, name? Yeah, so... that's really cool. Glad to hear that. Honestly, guys, we're loving the origin story. So keep sending those in. We read those during the main show, at least one or two, you know, in episodes. So we've got backlog of quite a few. So
I would love to get. I don't know if we have any listeners that have done this, but I would love to get someone's perspective of like someone who like read the first book when it came out. Like, you know what I mean? Just like
it had to wait.
Well, I mean, so none of the other books were out. I mean, just A Game of Thrones had come out.
Oh, my gosh.
And you picked it up and you read it. And then the second book came out.
I'd love to hear that, too.
Yeah.
I really would.
Because, yeah, most everyone's perspectives we get, and they're obviously all, I love them all.
Yeah.
But it just seems like a lot of the people who listen and stuff like that, we're all in the same boat. Is we started with the show, then dove in the books.
Yeah, so for sure. I would love to hear somebody who had to wait to figure out, you know, had to wait all those years.
The first three books came out pretty...
Yeah,
within reasonable time, and then it was A Feast for Crows. It took a while, and then A Dance of Dragons took a while, and now
right,
yeah,
they just kind of keep getting longer and longer. So yeah.
But I would love to be someone who like picked up in the '90s Game of Thrones and just read it and was like,
yeah. I think when I first started reading Dance of Dragons, had literally just hit the shelf.
Yeah.
I'm pretty sure, and you know, because I was trying to, well, yeah, because it came out with around the first season of so. Anyways, yeah, be neat. If that is you and you're listening, send us an email at send us a raven at btkcast@gmail.com.
Yeah.
So, all right. This weekend, Man the Wall. We have a knighting ceremony, and then we've got a couple quick announcements here for our Patreon series. So, here we go. Stephanie, we just read your raven, your origin story. So, in the name of the warrior, I charge you to be brave. In the name of the father, I charge you to be just. In the name of the mother, I charge you to defend the young and innocent. In the name of the maid, I charge you to protect all women. In the name of the smith, I charge you to mend the broken. In the name of the crown, I charge you to seek wisdom. In the name of the stranger, I charge you to face death with sword in hand. Rise, Lady Rena.
Yeah.
Oh, gosh. You know, I want more of the... every time I do one of these knighting ceremonies, I think about Dunk.
I know.
I think about being a hedge knight, you know, and now that I've moved, I'm kind of out in the country now, too. So I have a longer drive into work. I've been listening more, listening to the books more. And sometimes you set off early and the fog's out, you know, it's just sort of like, and I'm out in the country. We've got fields, open fields and hills and some trees and forests and things. I just think of myself and Sir Matt.
Yeah.
Just taking off,
you know,
through the countryside, just on a couple of hedge knights.
On an adventure.
Yeah. Just ready to pledge our swords.
You know? There and back again. I mean,
there and back again. You know? Right.
Yeah.
So, anyways. Guys, hit us up at patreon.com/bendtheknee. We've got exclusive podcasts there. We've got some extras for you. We've got some t-shirts at the $10 tier. We're working on a new t-shirt, actually.
Mm-hmm.
That we'd like to get out to everybody soon. So.
And we're two patrons away from a goal.
Yeah, we're two patrons away from a goal, so we're looking forward to hitting that goal.
And then we have the drinking game.
Yeah, the drinking game.
Yeah.
So that will be fun. You won't want to. Yeah. We're going to make one, possibly play one. I think we'll play one for research, and then we'll try to make one.
Yeah.
I've even thought it'd be kind of funny to, if you have ideas on how to make one of those, hit us up for sure, because I have a couple myself, but it'd be neat to hear.
We thought of one a while ago that would be like so bad. It would be like, let's get there's, you know. Let's get one type of alcohol per great house.
Yeah.
And so we were like, oh, okay, we'll get like, I don't know, like fire, you know, like fire whiskey or something for.
Oh, well,
and then like ice, like there's like Smirnoff ice, you know, like something like that. Like
for South Stark.
Right. And then we're like, okay, well, let's find one that has like, you know, a rose on it. Or Dornish wine. We'll get some wine.
Right,
rose.
So we walked in.
And we found something had a stag on it. Was it Jaeger? Is it Jaeger?
Something had a stag.
Is it Jaeger that has? I don't really drink.
Yeah, I'm not a huge. I'm more. I'm not either really.
So
but,
yeah. So I don't
beers maybe and stuff.
So but, I don't know. I don't know like the labels of alcohols and stuff.
So
like
we actually walked into a liquor store at one point and
we did.
We started looking at the label at all the labels and stuff. Logos.
We're like, well, we need something that has a dragon, something that has a wolf, something that has a lion.
We found most of them. Didn't
we did actually.
We actually found the Kraken.
Well, yeah, there's the Kraken. Yeah, that was why I was thinking of there's the Kraken. There's the Kraken. I think it's a rum.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I don't know. We. That game, though, I mean,
oh,
we can
be,
make
we'd
that.
Be, we'd be dead. We'd be dead. Because that's just like, that's like several types
of alcohol.
It just
depends on how you play it, though. You know?
Like the wine before liquor. What if you drink, what if you have to do something with Doran first and then you have to drink wine?
You're done.
There's like a Game of Thrones Monopoly. We get like Game of Thrones Monopoly, then we take shots based upon like what.
Wow. So if you have fun ideas for that, please
we'll
let
have to
us
film
know.
It and yeah, YouTube it. Put
we'll,
on our YouTube
we'll go
channel.
Nuts. Yeah. We would go nuts with it. So
or put it on our Patreon. It'd be our Patreon. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, anyways, anything else there for Man the Wall? I think.
I think that's...
Oh, we want you to join our Facebook page, facebook.com/bendtheknee podcast. If you're confused about where the group is, some people have had some questions about that. It is kind of difficult. Go to the main main Facebook page, mm-hmm. and on the left-hand side, if you go down to, I think it just says groups.
Mm-hmm.
So you can click groups there, and then you'll see we've created a group.
Right.
Once you join the group, it'll pop up right away. You can just type in Bend the Knee group.
And
it
I also realized, because I'm in a couple other podcast groups, and I realized that you can pin it to your bar, so it's right there. So you see it every time. Yeah.
You can jump in it pretty quick and things. So
I've been pretty quick about adding people to the groups as soon as I see them. Yeah.
Yep. Yeah, so honestly, guys, it's a lot of fun, and it's a way to kind of broaden the community. So if you're a new listener, you just want to hop in there. If you've been listening for a while, it's time to hop in. We need you in there. We need
memes,
your thoughts.
Whatever, yeah.
Yeah,
theories.
Funny memes, anything you want. I mean, just, you know, kind of it helps make the show better. I mean, it helps us with content. It helps us, you know, kind of understand what your, you know, questions. If you something about the series you didn't know and you want to know.
Because I go on a lot of forums. But I'm always on Facebook, so I see stuff on Facebook much quicker than I see something on Reddit or forums or something like that. Yeah. So
yeah. So it's a nice way for our own personal, you know, like this book club that we're kind of building.
Absolutely.
Here. That's where our community will be housed. Really, you know, it's where you guys can interact with each other. You can interact with us. We're pretty active on there, and so we're gonna start dropping some of our own theories in and out there just to get your. You know, and a lot of that stuff will go into Fallout Friday. So we have Ravens, but then we're gonna pull in, you know, from other corners of the realm. We're gonna pull in some different comments and things.
Right.
So.
And when we see a lot of people talking about the same thing, oh, that lets us know. It's another way. It's another way that's not Patreon actually for people to influence the show. If we see a lot of people talking about it, then we'll probably take note of that and talk about it.
Yep.
So.
Absolutely. So. All right, guys, I think that's it for this week. We appreciate you, you know, tuning in. And, you know, again, send those ravens to btkcast@gmail.com. And I think it's time to say farewell.
It is. We want to thank you for playing the Game of Thrones. In our next episode, we will be discussing Chapter 25, Eddard 5.
Mm-hmm. And I haven't done it in a while, but we want to thank Maluka for providing our outro. It's beautiful. We love her for it. Mm-hmm. And it's just fantastic. Yep. So. All right. If you like our podcast, don't forget to subscribe, like us, write a review, leave a comment, or send us a raven at btkcast@gmail.com.
We will see you in a week, and remember that winter is coming.
Welcome to another round of Boardroom or Miro Board. Today we talk retrospectives with Agile coach Maria. Let's go. First question. You've spent 2 hours in a team retro, but the only input you've heard is Dave's. Boardroom or Miro Board?
Boardroom. In Miro, Dave can't hog the space because everyone can add thoughts anonymously, online, at the same time.
Correct. Next. You need the team to act on feedback fast, so you turn all those retro notes into Jira tasks instantly.
Miro all the way. And I can assign those tasks to teammates.
You're nailing this. Now, you see hundreds of sticky notes from the retro. A real mess. But you organize them into 5 themes in just seconds.
Miro, I basically get back an entire hour when I use its AI tools for clustering.
And she's done it.
Join over 60 million people running actually enjoyable and actionable retros in Miro. Get your first 3 boards free at Miro.com. That's M-I-R-O.com.